T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
2:09 on a Saturday, and we're pleased to be joined by the vet, Dr. Gene Gaske from VCA Bloomington Animal Hospital. And, of course, it is Ask the Vet this hour. If you have a question for the vet about your pet, dog, or cat, feel free to call the program, 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226. You can text 81807. That is 81807. And we quickly segued from summer to winter. We didn't have much of an autumn in these parts. And we've at 28 degrees, we don't have to worry pretty much about ticks or fleas or mosquitoes or that sort of thing. But we have other things to worry about around the house at the holidays. And a pleasure to visit with you. And thanks so much for coming in studio today. And there are a lot of hazards around the house at the holidays for our pets.
Yeah, there certainly are. But just a segue back to the ticks. Actually, ticks are still out.
That can't be.
In fact, we are recommending that dogs or any animal that's outside, so cats that could be exposed to ticks, stay on it year-round. There is enough wildlife that continues the life cycle. They go into hibernation, but if it's above freezing, they certainly can continue their lifestyle and need blood, and so will bite any of the warm-blooded animals around. So it's not unusual. We do have ticks still yet. I had a case that came in, and the dog had a couple ticks on it last week. So it is something that has extended. We used to be more seasonal, but now it's 10 months to a full year being on tick preventative.
One thing we've learned, in particularly in recent years, the types of diseases that can be transmitted to humans from ticks, is it the same for our pets, that over your career you've seen an uptick?
Oh, right.
Pardon the pun.
Yeah, right. And some of the ticks are carrying multiple diseases. You know, it's not just one. So it is important. That's the best type of surveillance, is just to use a good flea and tick preventative. Now, fleas are probably going to be, quitting here soon. And hopefully they didn't bring a flea infestation into the house for the remainder of the year, because getting fleas out of your house takes usually a 3-month period of time. But so, and then the holidays, yes, lots of things that happen at the holidays, just the chaos in general, upsetting the animals' regular routine. And then we have all the food, coming up with Thanksgiving. People get busy and they just throw things in the garbage and forget that, Fido wants to go to the garbage, and we get a lot of indigestion, vomiting, diarrhea from eating just some of the bones or just all the rich food that happens. And so those type of things, and even people gathering. Some dogs get really anxious. Cats get anxious. Too much, it's too overwhelming. So if you know your pet, oftentimes some people even put them in boarding for the day because there's so many people. You have to watch out. Doors are opening. Animals get out. They're fearful and they'll run. So lots of things that people should be aware of.
Is it a good idea, if your dog or cat aren't used to it, to put them away? I know you talk about a crate training and, a kennel box and those types of things. Is that recommended
in a lot
of circumstances?
Yeah, especially if the pet, if you're having a big crowd over and the pet is just anxious or excited, putting them in the basement, away in a crate, someplace safe where they're not exposed to all that. Plus, the other thing is you have a hard time controlling your guests, and guests love to feed dogs food, and then that happens, and then you're, trying to figure out who fed the dog something because now it's sick. So we see, after the holidays, we see a lot of GI problems, vomiting, diarrhea, just because of food ingestion.
In my experience over the years with cats as well, putting up a tree, the lights, that sort of thing, I've had a few Christmas tree disasters. I wish I would have caught it on video, because they'd be YouTube hits. But that's another thing to be aware of as well, that the cats are going to get into and it can be dangerous.
Well, there's a lot of things. You know, you bring in some new object like a tree, and then the animal can't figure it out, mainly cats. And sometimes that's too stressful, and they start urinating outside the litter box, or they start climbing the tree. I don't think people use tinsel so much anymore, but that, you know, certainly is something they would love to chew. So in the garland and some of those decorations are fun for cats to, you know, play with, and they can ingest it.
The vet is in. Dr. Gene Gehisky is here. Here are the phone numbers if you have a question for the vet about your pet. 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. I had a follow-up. We let off talking about that there are still problems with ticks and can be year-round. What preventatives do you recommend? Because I know in the past when you've been on the program, pet owners have concerns about the toxicity that some of those flea and tick preventatives can have.
Yeah, there's some really great ones. I think the most important thing is that you always talk to your vet because they're going to know the history. So, you know, there are some ones that maybe if your animal has exhibited a potential for a seizure, you'd want to stay away from, you know, one of the classes of flea and ticks. But they've gotten so much safer. They also have oral flea and tick now that if people are concerned about having topicals on their pets, we have an alternative. You know, the majority of these are actually very safe, but I think where we run into problem is a lot of the over-the-counter flea and tick preventatives. People don't read the label correctly. They put, you know, a tick product that was made for a dog on a cat. There's lots of different things that do happen because the insecticides are still like the number one or two toxicities for animals that they see year after year.
Let's go to the phone lines. Once again, our phone number on the program, Ask the Vet, is 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. You can text the program, and that is 81807, 81807. Bonnie, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi there. I have a question. We have a purebred lab that we bred purposely, and I'm just wondering, she had two AIs and then a live breeding, and now it's been a week since her last, since the last breeding, but she is continuing to spot. Is that a sign, like the last part of her heat cycle, is that a sign that the pregnancy probably did not happen or the eggs didn't implant or...
No,
not necessarily.
That's not necessary at all. She'll just continue her heat cycle. I think she's at the end of it. So the spotting has nothing to do whether she, you know, was successfully bred or not.
Okay. So, good. Well, that's good news.
So hopefully all those three kind of procedures did help.
All right. Thanks for the call, Bonnie. Let's talk a little bit about the flip side of this and spay and neuter. This comes up each and every show. We should probably, and I know this has kind of been a moving target, you know, six months, depending, dogs, cats. What's the latest?
Well, you know, there's enough evidence to potentially say that the spay and neuter early in certain breeds, so large animal breeds, may cause some issues down the road, mostly with potentially having cruciate tears, so knee problems. Cranial cruciate tears can occur. They seem to occur more often in animals, large breed animals that were spayed or neutered early. But with that being said, there's the whole flip side is that, you know, the early spay and neuter is helping with population control. You know, they look at it at adopting these animals out and potentially, you know, decreasing the amount of unwanted births out there and having to deal with all these puppies and kittens that don't have, you know, homes, and then we're trying to find it. So I think one of the things, if you're getting a puppy from a breeder, then I think by convention, my recommendation is just wait. I'm still concerned about some of these other long-term issues that may occur. So I tell people, 6 months, if you can do that, especially for the large breed dogs.
Our phone number is 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226. You can text 81807, that is 81807. The vet is in. Let's get to one more call before we break. Let's bring in Johnny in Minnetonka. Johnny, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm going to ask the vet, we just got a puppy. He's a teddy bear, mini teddy bear. And the reason being is because our son is super allergic to almost every other breed that we've tested him with. But we have this beautiful little puppy. We live in a very wooded lot, and he seems to like to eat only leaves mostly. And we can't get him under control with that. And I'm just asking, is that a problem for him to be digesting leaves and sticks? And maybe advice how to keep him from doing that. We're trying to be consistent with telling him no and getting it out of his mouth, but he just seems to be like a little crazy puppy.
Yeah, welcome to the world of puppyhood. They put everything in their mouth. I don't think that if he's eating a leaf here and there and a piece of stick, that happens quite often. One of the things that you could do is when you're taking him outside to potty train and get him some exercise, try to keep him on a leash so that you can pull him away from that area so he doesn't go there. The other thing is to divert his attention to some play toy if he's already voided and, you know, urinated and defecated so that you have substitution so he'll want to chew something else. But there is some concern. Sometimes the wood has decaying matter on it, and they can get a little vomiting or diarrhea because of that. But it's a hard thing, Johnny. It's something that they're going to outgrow, so you just have to be diligent with it. And I think just puppies like to chew in general, so I always tell substitution. If they're chewing on something, they shouldn't have something in your hand. Give them something appropriate to chew on and kind of divert their attention to that. And that's something you have to do over and over and over again. Teaching them the word drop and then giving them a very good treat is also a good trick, something that you can teach early. It's just by giving them something more that they would like a, you know, sometimes I even tell people this is the only time that I may use some human food in the training just to, you know, up the ante a little bit so that they're more interested in the food than whatever's in their mouth.
Quick break. We have more with the vet. Dr. Gene Geske is in studio. If you have a question for the vet about your pet, dogs, and cats, by all means, feel free to call the program 651-989-9226. We have Mary. We'll get to her right out of the break. We have a number of texts to get to as well. Once again, it is Ask the Vet today here on CCO. Thanks so much for joining us, and a big thanks to the vet, Dr. Gene Geske, joining us in studio today. It is Ask the Vet. If you have a question for the vet about your dog or cat, by all means, give us a call, 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226. You can text 81807. We have a number of those to get to, 81807, and that's good for all our programs here on CCO. It is 227, and let's go to the phone lines, and we have Mary waiting on the line. Mary, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I guess it's afternoon, isn't it? Sorry about that. I have a German Shepherd, part German Shepherd, part Retriever dog that it was a rescue. He's about 10 years old now, and about 4 years ago, I rescued a cat. I live on a farm, and he was in my yard, and she was really injured very badly. But they've been living together in my house for about 4 years or so, maybe. And they've been getting along fine. And all of a sudden, about a month or so ago, she just yowls at him, and she attacks him. The cat attacks the dog, and he's frightened, and then he starts, you know, wanting to rage at her, and I'm just wondering why this is happening. She is spayed, he is neutered.
Okay. Mary, I think one thing that you should probably do is get that cat in. Sometimes when cats are not feeling well and there's an underlying condition, they just want to be left alone, so their whole demeanor will change and they can get a little more reclusive and may not want to be playing with your German Shepherd. The other thing is sometimes we'll see some seasonal changes just because cats, even though she has been spayed, they're in breeding season right now, and they can actually be aware of kind of what's going on outside the house and if there's any stray cats out there and breeding and things like that. That could set off some behavioral issues with her and may cause her to act in a different way. But I think the first thing that I would tell you is to get her in and probably do some blood work to make sure that there isn't any underlying pain or any other medical condition where she is, you know, just wanting to be left alone and not play with the German Shepherd anymore.
And they hide it very well. Right. That's something I've learned from you over the years when you've come in and visited with us and taken phone calls. Dogs and cats do a really good job, you know, hiding this. I remember when my daughter's service dog injured her knee. Now you could see that she wasn't putting any weight on her back left leg. But other than that, you couldn't really tell that she was in pain or in discomfort. You know, she still was trying to act as normally as she could.
Yeah, they really do disguise their pain. They, you know, if they're showing their pain and they exhibit any type of, you know, vocalization and things like that, they become the prey versus the predator. And so they are wired differently on how they handle things. And so very stoic. And so sometimes the only way we know things is a change of behavior. And so that's why in Mary's case, the cat's change of behavior is a big tip off that something may be going on.
And we've talked about that when you have pets that are established and you bring a new pet into the situation, because I'm sure it's pretty common in your practice that there are homes with multiple, you know, a couple of dogs, couple of cats, or both in a household.
Right, and depending on the, you know, I guess the personalities of the animals in there, sometimes it's just one animal that upsets the whole apple cart. Mm. And you've got a lot of behavioral issues, then all of a sudden do exist. So you do have to be a little bit careful about how many pets and that you're bringing in and what their personalities are, or actually just having the ability then to keep them separate so that behavioral issues don't occur.
But that change in behavior is definitely a sign that the animal should be seen, dog or cat.
Right. Any abrupt change like that could also be, you know, or many times is linked medically to some issue. You know, that cat could be really arthritic and just is like, you know, this hurts now. We're into the season where arthritis is flaring and, you know, that cat may just not want to play anymore. And the only way it has to tell the, you know, the dog to stay away is to become aggressive.
We have more with the vet. Dr. Gene Gazke is in studio. Quick break for the weather. We'll come back. We should remind you now is a great time to call. We have phone lines open at 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. We have a bunch on the text line at 81807. We'll get to those, including some problems with bad breath. That we'll get into. Dog with really bad breath. We'll try to get to the bottom of that coming up here on the CCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is Ask the Vet. We're pleased to be joined in studio by Dr. Jean Gazke. She is a vet at VCA Bloomington Animal Hospital, and we have a number of folks lined up on the phone lines, 651-989-9226. You can text 81807, 81807. Real quick to the text line, and we promise we'll jump on those phone calls. From our text line, how do you keep a cat from eating houseplants? What could be going on there? What do I do?
Get rid of your houseplants.
Uh-oh.
That's all you can really do, or put them up at an area where the cat can't get at them. I think the biggest concern is make sure you know which houseplants are toxic to cats, because there are quite a few. The worst of them are the lilies, anything of the, you know, usually cut flowers, but the tiger lilies, day lilies, things like that, they're very, very toxic, can put a cat into renal failure and die. So I don't think you can prevent it. I think you can try to, you know, like I said, put them up high, get artificial plants. It's just something the cats do.
Now, is it something, though, they're looking for in their diet, or is it more of a play thing? They're bored? Or is it hard to know?
It's really hard to know. It's rare, but it could be linked to some type of internal parasite. So obviously, you know, making sure that your cat is healthy and you've had a parasite check. But oftentimes, it's just what cats do.
All right. Get rid of those plants if you're...
Well, especially the toxic ones, sure.
Well, what about some of that pet grass you see? is that effective? Is it okay? Because I know, like my daughter's dog, she'll go out and chomp on the grass every now and then. I've seen cats do it as well.
Yeah, it's usually fine. I mean, if an animal is seeking it and doing it all the time, then we sometimes do look at their diet. Is it a quality diet? Is there something missing that way? But most of the diets out there are balanced, but not all of them. And so even if people are thinking they're feeding a really good diet, it could be lacking certain minerals. Like, you know, we recently found out that grain-free diets are lacking taurine, and that is causing heart disease in dogs. And so we have to step back. We don't have enough of information to really know exactly what's going on, and is it all grain-free diets, but we do know the lack of taurine will be causing this dilated cardiomyopathy. And so the majority of people out there don't need to be on grain-free diets. It was kind of a fad that people kind of jumped the bandwagon on. And so that's one thing you're thinking, you know, as pet owners, you're doing the right thing, but these diets have really caused quite a some terminal illness in some of these dogs. Some of them are ending up dying, and it's permanent damage to the heart.
We should pause there for a moment. We've talked about this many times in our recent visits about diet. You walk into these pet food superstores or even the local grocery store, there are a lot of options, and
right.
It's kind of like, what do I do? But you have some diets that are good, solid diets that have been around for a long time that, you know, maybe people are just getting too far off the beaten path, if you will.
Well, and a lot of it's marketing. You know, you can make a package look pretty, and you can read the ingredients and to say, okay, these are all, you know, good ingredients. But it doesn't, if the quality of the ingredient isn't there or if there's some contamination. So it's really important that who's ever making these dyes, they're doing quality testing. They're taking those. And what's even better is if they do food trials, they actually feed them to the animals to make sure that all the nutrients are absorbed in there in an absorbable form. Because you can make any recipe look good, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's completely digestible or that it's got all the minerals and vitamins that they actually need.
All right. And I know you're generally don't like to recommend a certain diet, but do you have a few that come to mind that people can consider, for instance, for a dog? I know you mentioned, you know, Purina has been around a long time.
Yeah, you know, some of the big box stores, as people call them, or companies, they do these things. They do quality testing. They're testing their, you know, their food as it's coming off the line. They have done food trials. They're following AFCO standards. So, you know, typically a Science Diet, Royal Canin, and even some of the Purina lines are completely acceptable. And I would prefer to have people feed food that we know isn't contaminated versus some of these, you know, cute little recipes that they, you know, come up or, you know, there's no quality testing that's going on because, you know, we run into these problems.
Once again, the vet is in studio, 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226. We'll have more on the text line or from the text line in a moment. Let's go to the phones and bring in Rick in New Hope. Rick, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good.
Good, Rick.
Good. Hi. Just two quick questions. We've got a 14-year-old Lab Sharpei. He's about 38 pounds. He's dropped a couple pounds. And we're seeing, you know, his hips and his ribs a little more, and he's eating fine. We feed him Neutro, which we know we're feeding him good food. And just curious about that. I mean, we had him in this summer for his shots and a physical, and they said everything looks good, that he looks young. But now, like I say, we're seeing his, like, hip bones and his rib cage a little more.
So, Rick, I'd be certainly concerned that he's going through some type of disease process that's actually taking the nutrients away from him, and that's what's causing, you know, the muscle mass to actually decrease. So I'm not sure if they did blood work when you brought them in, but things can change pretty quickly. You have to remember animals age much more quickly than we do. And so within 6 month period of time, they can go from perfectly healthy to all of a sudden an underlying disease. So anytime an animal is losing weight and you see that much atrophy of muscles, I think it's time to get them back in, test for those kidney values. I certainly think that probably as a 14-year-old lab, I could guarantee he's got arthritis. Sometimes they're not moving as well as they should, and they will get muscle atrophy. So it is something to really, be concerned about. And if there's anything that you can do, some of these things have some reversibility to them. We certainly have physical therapy and things like that. But I think the underlying cause of why he's losing weight needs to be found out.
Well, let's go to the phones again. Karen, you're on with the vet. Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Hi, Karen.
Hi. I have two Tibetan Terriers. They're both female. One's 10 and one's 6. They adore each other. But periodically, all of a sudden, they'll just get in this huge fight. I mean, they could be sitting across the room, nothing going on, and all of a sudden they're staring at each other and they get in this fight where I have to get a broom to get them apart. And then a half hour later, they're snuggled up together.
Hmm. Yeah, so, you know, the hard part of that would be to try to figure out what is the set point, and are they, fighting over certain toys? Is it food related? If they're just sitting there staring at each other, again, the 10-year-old, you know, sometimes when behavioral issues start, especially when they've been ongoing and things have been fine and then all of a sudden there's abrupt change, I'd be concerned that, again, there might be some medical issue going on. I pick the 10-year-old because they, they're in an age range where other things can occur. So it is a good idea to seek some help from your veterinarian. Certainly do a good workup to make sure they're both healthy and then do some, abruption of change and behavioral modification because you don't want this to escalate. So when things occur and they're not dealt with, they can get worse and worse as time goes on. And then we've got a more of a problem to deal with. And then you'd probably need to go see a behaviorist.
Chris and Egan, you're on with Dr. Gene Geske. Chris, thanks again for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I adopted an 8-year-old German Shepherd from a rescue about 5 years ago, so she's going on 13. And I understand that, mobility will become an issue and it is an issue already. So I brought her in and had x-rays, and I'm not sure I'm saying it right, but she was diagnosed with some type of spondylosis,
okay.
Degeneration.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, I think that's led to my second problem, which is bowel incontinence. And I'm just wondering, is there anything that I can do to slow this process, to help her? She's an amazing, wonderful dog. I'm cleaning up a lot of messes. She gets about a 2-second warning before she has to go outside.
There are some things, if it's driven by her just not so much incontinence, but she's too painful to actually go out and void like she should. And so managing the pain part of her spondylosis with supplements like glucosamine and vitamin E, fatty acids, and then pain medication. But sometimes they do get a degenerative type of incontinence. And there really isn't a medicine, unfortunately, that will change that. Sometimes it's an animal wearing a diaper or, making an area in the household acceptable for, if they have to void that, it's not hard to clean up. German Shepherds do have degenerative diseases, and she's certainly doing well at 13, but it may be a lifestyle change for her. And I think you should probably talk to your vet about if the pain is being managed, and that may help.
And what is spondylosis?
I think spondylosis itself is just inflammation of the end plates of the vertebra. there's different kinds. Certainly, it's related to sometimes arthritis and pain. But it also, because it's out of the spine, you can have impingement of some of those nerve roots that come from the spine itself, and that could be causing some issue. German Shepherds, like I said, often get degenerative myelopathy, which is something we see, and I think it's underdiagnosed because we don't have a great test for it, but you can look at symptoms. So it is something that I think in any of those cases, talking to your veterinarian just to see if there's any other medications. But incontinence by itself, unless it's urinary, we don't have a lot of medication to use.
Quick break. We have more with the vet, Dr. Gene Gatzke, in studio. We have a number of things to get to on the text line. We have Robin waiting on the phone lines. We'll talk to Robin in a moment here on CCO. It is Ask the Vet here on CCO. Dr. Gene Gatzke is in studio. We've had a lot of great calls and a number of texts, and we'll try and squeeze in a couple of those before we say goodbye today. We have all the news and weather at 3. Sports Saturday gets started. A ton to talk about. Timberwolves playing better. The Wild have been on a roll. The Vikes have a big one against Chicago tomorrow night. Football playoffs continue. There's college football. Galore, we'll get some playoff reports there. St. John's, Bethel, and UMD started their playoff runs today. Let's go to Robin on the phone lines. Robin, you're on the air with the vet. Hello.
Hi. Can you tell me what walking dandruff is and how common is it?
So walking dandruff is usually referred to a mite called Calathiella. It's fairly common, easy to get rid of. So shouldn't be an issue. Usually the animal has big flakes, and it doesn't actually walk, but it comes up to the surface. And so an excessive amount of flaking of the skin, one of the first things to think about is having a mite called Calathiella.
Very good. I didn't know there was walking dandruff.
Walking dandruff.
You learn something new every day. Here's something important from our text line, and this is certainly a warning to pet owners. From the text line, I have an older pit bull who has arthritis pretty bad. What should I give them for that pain? We're going to be very careful about human over-the-counter pain meds.
There's very few safe over-the-counter human pain meds. And the reason that is they can go into kidney failure. They can have GI ulcers. And so you really have to talk to your veterinarian. There's really safe pain medication that's available. A whole group of non-steroidal anti-inflammatories have really come to the market and have been much safer. We actually have a newer line of drugs that have really been helpful. So I think really you need to seek your veterinarian's advice for those type of things, because giving Tylenol or giving ibuprofen, any of those, even aspirin, can cause severe side effects. And certainly that's the last thing you want to do, is to cause harm to your pet by giving them a drug that they can't handle.
Yeah, Tylenol, though, major no-no.
Right. I mean, in cats, it can kill cats. There is some indication in very rare cases that we might use some Tylenol. But again, that's rare cases, and you need to talk to your veterinarian about that use.
So tread very lightly. I would definitely get advice.
Right.
Yeah. There is separation anxiety. 14-year-old Basset Hound. He has terrible separation anxiety since losing our other dog last year. What can be done?
You know, that's something that I, if it's that bad, I usually refer to a behaviorist. We have behaviorists in the Twin City, very lucky to do that, because it's a whole plan of redirecting them and giving them other things to think about. And sometimes it even uses medication, but a lot of the medication they're defaulting to are just supplements now. So natural supplements that are out there to help that. So I would refer to a behaviorist. That's just a long question I can't answer on the air.
Yeah, and we are really tight on time. Here's another one. A 2-year-old Australian Shepherd, really bad breath, but he eats quality kibble. We've taken the dog into the vet. The teeth check out fine. What can be done about this terrible breath?
So the bad breath, two things can happen. Bad breath is linked to dental disease, and so the teeth themselves can look healthy, but the gums could be infected and can give you bad breath. The other thing that can cause bad breath is GI upset. So they can have GI reflux or GERD, like in people. And so you'll get kind of a sewer smell out of the dog. And so if they didn't do any type of laboratory work or talk about some type of things that could be causing, the GERD, that's something that they should look at. But just because the teeth look healthy doesn't mean that under the gum line they can't have periodontal disease or gingivitis. So if that dog did not have a dental, I would certainly recommend that, because the majority of bad breath cases are linked to dental disease.
We are just about out of time. It's good to see you, Dr. Jean Gaske, a vet at VCA Bloomington Animal Hospital. What's the phone number at the clinic?
The phone number is 952-884-3228.
It is a pleasure to see you. We had a lot of great calls and texts on the program. We apologize if we didn't get to any of those texts today, and hopefully you can join us again soon.
Yeah, we'll have some other winter kind of wonderland tips out there to keep your pets healthy.
Yeah, and I'm happy the snow stayed away. I know there's snow lovers out there, but I'm happy I didn't get any overnight at my house.
Yeah.
And we'll keep our fingers crossed.
All right.
All right. Thanks so much once again, Dr. Jean Gaske, joining us here on CCO. We have all the news and weather coming up at 3 o'clock. Eric Nelson settling in for Sports Saturday. We have a lot of college football to talk about. St. John's Bethel and UMD got started in the playoffs today. We'll have results and game reports. We'll keep an eye on the high school football playoffs and more here on the CCO.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.